Paula Gordon, Bill Russell, Harold Holzer. I love thinking about Abraham Lincoln as cool.
He also had another advantage that I is just all through this, the spoils system.
Patronage. Thank you.
It spoils. At least the candidates today don't have it quite as overtly. This, you know, we do have a civil service system that in theory deals with some of that, but the just constant pounding that he took from day one
and protected.
And it was part. I mean, and you make an excellent point that this was not. Yes, it consumed a tremendous amount of energy. It consumed a tremendous amount of time and attention, and it was what he had run to do.
Exactly. I think. And isn't it
part of what he'd run to do?
Take over the party, take over the apparatus.
And the government.
There were two reasons. One is that he was a partisan. He believed the Republican Party should be in control. But the social underpinning, the social motivation was if you stop the Southern Democratic control of the federal bureaucracy, the Supreme Court, the Congress, every post office in the country, that you can begin to arrest the spread of slavery by having your people in office. Plus, it was something that was done, reward the faithful, and therefore take full control. And yet he has this image as being beleaguered and tortured and set upon by these office seekers. Boy, talk about thinking ahead. He took care of both things. He did the out with the old and in with the new, and he emerged as someone who seems to be wearied and exhausted by them.
Well, he probably was. That's a lot of work.
But I think a pleasureful exhaustion.
You talk about him being, and there's a wonderful quote that I probably will scramble, a giant of the earth, that he takes sustenance.
Yes,
and
his secretary said that.
That he is revived by simply going out into the woods and taking a walk.
In the middle of the winter, he took a cold train trip, missed one train, came in on a late train to pay a visit to his stepmother. Did he know it was going to be his last visit? She sure thought so. And, staying in a state senator's rustic house, visiting his mother, going out on rutted, frozen roads with his country cousin and giving her a simple shawl, which she clutched at as a treasure. And, of course, his host, the state senator, later wrote him and said, I want a political appointment. Never ended. And so did one of his cousins. But when he came back, as you say, John Hay said he's just, he has taken from the earth. He's inspirited and revived. And he needed that for that inaugural journey.
There is a sense of his connection, not only to the earth, but to the very best of what America is.
And that is the eternal lesson of Lincoln. If you disagree or agree with how quickly or slowly he proceeded to emancipation, or how tied he was to the inevitability of war, and the one thing that Abraham Lincoln does for every person, whether he's from, New York or Illinois by way of Kansas, Hawaii, and Kenya, or is an Air Force brat born in Panama, is that by virtue of your ability and your courage and your stamina and your intellectual gifts and your commitment to people, you can rise as high as anywhere else in the world, higher. And that's an amazing story, which he lived and which he saved for future generations.
David Blight's the person who really focused me on the notion of the revisionist histories that got written after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
The oppressed South, the nobility, the fact that it wasn't about slavery, it was about
fanciful
states' mm-hmm. rights and free people and all the things that go with
tariffs,
that.
Other major
perniciously fanciful.
And it still is alive and well today. I have lots of friends. I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. Oh. I can introduce you to a lot of people that will tell you those same things. One of the really striking things about this book to me is the unambiguous, well, two things. One is the unambiguous role of slavery.
It's in the secession ordinances.
It's everywhere. It's just unambiguous.
Absolutely.
And the other piece,
right, the So white supremacy is right, and that's what we're founding our new republic on. Absolutely.
And the battles were about extending slavery to new states. The other piece, the argument has frequently been that the North, that this was an economic war on the part of the North. What I had not realized as thoroughly, I knew that the mayor of New York was trying to secede.
New York City,
that is.
I know. I bear the weight of that.
Awkwardly, I hope.
Very awkwardly.
But his reasoning was economics.
The mayor of New York's reasoning.
The mayor of New York.
He was willing to sacrifice
whatever.
The right, sure, to maintain the port's activity with the cotton. Absolutely.
But I bring that up not to pick on New York necessarily, but to say, which we love.
But you managed to get it in there.
We're New York's big fans.
It was tangential. But it, to me, is an illustration of how specious that economic argument is. There was a lot, economically, there was a lot going on. No question about that. But it is so. It is to me just unambiguous that this was about slavery, and that the economics actually fell both ways.
Exactly, and it was economics, class, race, all involved in a large degree here, and it certainly was manifested in New York, in those horrendous draft riots, which were not just about the draft; they were about white people and black people,
and class, and Irish, and German.
The torture and the hanging and the sexual mutilation, and all these horrible things that people became capable of in the name of resisting the draft shows you that there was a lot beneath the surface. So you can start with economics, you can start with tariffs. There's a recently discovered letter in the Lincoln Canon to Senator Tom Corwin of Ohio. Corwin had said, you know, all you do is talk about slavery and freedom. Why don't you talk about the tariff, and why don't you talk about economics? And Lincoln wrote back, that is just stupid. It's the only time we know that he ever told someone that in a letter. This is all that matters.
He really said that?
Stupid. I mean, he didn't say you're stupid. He said to say that is stupid. You know, he was indirect, but he was pretty tough. It's a great new letter. It was owned by the family. No wonder they didn't part with it all these years. It's just been recirculated after. You know, he wrote it in 1859, and it's just back out there.
Harold Holzer has so many things to tell us, and a few more when we come back in a moment. Please stay with us.